Rex Walters has joined us on Sports Byline. I mentioned the head coach at the University of San Francisco Dons. He also was a head coach at Florida Atlantic University as well. He went to not only Northwestern, but played his college ball at Kansas, and then 7 years in the NBA. You played for some great coaches. I don't think there's any. You mentioned about Chuck Daly, Roy Williams, and then Pat Riley as well. What is it that those consistently great coaches and winning coaches do? What is it they consistently do in order to have that success?
I think they're great with people. You know, I think Pat Riley, Chuck Daly, Roy Williams, they have an aura to them too that you instantly automatically respect about them. You know, and it wasn't just about the championships that they'd won, because when I played for Coach Williams, he hadn't won a championship. But they had a certain aura about them that you instantly wanted to play and run through a wall for them, you know, and I think that's the great thing about those three.
What is more important with the coach? Is it the ability to push the right X's and O's in a game, or is it the communication and being able to motivate the players?
I think it has to absolutely be the motivation of the player and knowing that they believe, you know, as a coach, knowing that your players absolutely believe in you. As a player, knowing that this guy is doing everything he can to help you as a player, but help the team, you know, win the game. You've got to have that it. You know, those guys have that it where, like I said, guys, they love playing for them. You know, it's not about a special play, and those guys can diagram plays and get you shots, but that's not what you know, motivates people. It's more than that.
You know what's interesting about that motivation, Rex, is that it's different at the pro level than it is at the college level. I mean, you're dealing with kids at the college level, and at the pro level, maybe you've got a player that's making $15 million a season, and so I don't know how you motivate them. If they want to do it, they're going to do it. What is the difference in that motivation dynamic at the two levels?
Well, you know, Pat Riley literally would have you want to run through a wall in one of his pregame speeches.
Even though you would say, well, wait a minute, coach, that's a good idea, but let me talk to my agent.
Yeah, no, I mean, he absolutely had Alonzo Mourning completely bought in, you know, to what he was trying to do. He would spin and have these stories, and you're like, where is he going with this? And then somehow he got you right back to this team, this moment, this challenge. It was really good for me. You know, I wasn't a great player, but just an opportunity to sit in those locker rooms and listen to him talk before and after games, before practices, after practices, it just inspired you. And it's hard. 82-game schedule, playoffs. I've never seen, you know, late 20-year-olds, you know, early 30-year-olds really buy into what one man would say like Coach Riley did. It was unbelievable. I've never seen someone speak. And I heard him speak last about 2 years ago about Magic Johnson, you know, out in L.A. And I still, you know, as a 40-year-old, I was still getting goosebumps listening to him talk. There's something about him that's special when it comes to speaking and getting people to believe in what he's saying.
One of the things I liked about Chuck Daly was that he coached at every level. He coached high school, he coached college, and he coached in the NBA with great success up in Detroit. What was it about him and his ability to motivate?
He was an unbelievable psychologist. Unbelievable psychologist. Could get into the head, understood what made people tick, could deal with 13 different, he used to call them corporations, and get all these corporations to buy in to one common purpose. I mean, he had his hands full in New Jersey. You know, you're talking about Derek Coleman and Kenny Anderson and Benoit Benjamin and Dwayne Chincius. But he got those guys to believe. He got more out of that team. He obviously had great teams in Detroit, but he could get into guys' heads and get them to do what they needed to do.
And believability is probably the most important thing, whether it's at the college level or at the pro level, that the players believe what you're saying.
You have to believe that there's no agenda with the coach. You have to believe that. You have to believe this guy's completely about this team and about getting the most out of us. And when you have that, guys will do what they're uncomfortable doing. You know what I mean? And both those coaches and Coach Williams as well, they could get guys to do that. They believe that this guy truly had no agenda but to get the most out of their team.
What did you take away from them that you've brought to college coaching?
Well, as you know, obviously we talked about Chuck as a psychologist. I try more to look at all the other factors outside of the kid, you know, the things that make him tick. With Coach Riley, obviously, I want to have great speeches. I want to know exactly the message we want to get across to get them fired up. With Coach Williams, the sincerity we talked about, how sincere he is, how you believe everything he says. It didn't have to be yelling. It didn't have to be whispering. Whatever message it was, you believed in what he's saying. That's the biggest thing. I saw in all three of those guys, there's a lot of – they all have different personalities, different ways of doing it, but they absolutely got the kids to believe in what they're doing. And as a coach, you know, they have to know that I have no agenda, that this is just about what's best for USF, what's best for this team, and then what's best for you.
What was it that made you want to take this job, by the way? I mean, it was a struggling program. There was no doubt about it. I know it's in your backyard where you grew up. That makes some sense as well. But there are some built-in, I won't say limitation factors, some built-in challenges that maybe you don't have at other big-time programs as well.
Coming back home was a big deal. You know, the success they had in the past, the great history they had in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and even in the early 80s, to get that back. Obviously, there's so much to sell with this program. You're going to get an unbelievable education. You're going to be in one of the greatest cities in the world. You're going to be in a great conference with, you know, Gonzaga, St. Mary's, BYU, Santa Clara. We got a great conference. The challenge, quite honestly, I was a guy that no one thought was going to play in the NBA. Right now, not a lot of people are saying we're going to overtake Gonzaga, but that's the goal, and that's what, you know, drives me as a coach. That's what drove me as a player, is try to prove people wrong.
Also, when you came in, you kind of had to retool the whole team. You let some guys go that had been pretty good scorers for you, pretty good players for you. What was it that you saw that necessitated you needing to come in and set a different tone with this team?
You know, with every kid that we recruit, we talk about the same thing, and I've already said it before. We expect your best in the classroom. We expect your best on the court, and we expect your best in the community. And if any of those three we fudge on, I'm not, and we're not living up to what San Francisco basketball and University of San Francisco is about. We want to be great in all aspects. We want to not only win championships, but 10, 15 years from now, we're watching our guys be successful in the world at whatever they want to do. I feel like I can recruit the student athlete that can get that done. And I've made mistakes, and I've misevaluated. But we feel like we've got this thing in a position where we can really do big things.
You know, one of the things I feel sorry for you and almost any coach today about is the fact that you're obviously looking for a blue chip player. I mean, they can make a difference. You don't need, like in football, 10 or 12 guys. You need maybe two guys, somebody on the board, somebody out on the perimeter. And yet, if you go out and recruit a kid, one, if he is a blue chip, he's probably only going to hang around for 1 year before jumping to the pros, which then interrupts the continuity of what you're trying to build as a whole. And then the second thing is that you wonder about the commitment to academics, because they want to use the college to be a road to the pros. And so, therefore, you're having to deal with something that may be beyond your control. You don't know if they're going to the classroom, if they're showing up, they're going to stay eligible. And then the third dynamic, which I really feel sorry for you, is that one in which they watch ESPN and they got family and friends whispering in their ears. The coach doesn't know what he's doing. He's not playing you enough. You ought to be doing this and that. Yeah. I mean, you've got short hair as it is, but I don't see much gray.
Yeah. You know, I think the biggest thing as a basketball player, you want to have guys that love winning and hate losing. And if you recruit those guys, if it's for a year, 2 years, 4 years, whatever, you're going to get an awful lot out of that young man on the basketball floor. At San Francisco, we do. You know, you've got to be able to do the work, you know, academically, and you've got to be committed to that. I mean, you're going to get a $53,000 scholarship to go to one of the greatest schools in the country and in one of the greatest cities in the world. So that's a big deal, and we don't budge on that. And, you know, our motto at San Francisco is change the world from here, so that means you got to be great in the community as well. So we're looking for, and that makes our pool small. It does, and we're not a school where we have the name recognition right now that kids are just going to want to come. You know what I mean? So we've really got to show them what a unique situation is. But there's no question. Coaching has me up late at nights, a lot of nights, but that's the deal I made, and I love what I do.
One of the things that I've found over the years when I've interviewed people like Frank Robinson, the Hall of Famer, Bill Russell's a good friend of mine, of course, who played at USF, is that it was not easy or either good for them as either managers or coaches. Because I remember Bill when he was coaching the Seattle Supersonics and I was doing the broadcast up there, it used to drive him nuts that the players didn't show the same commitment to the sport that he brought to it. And I would think a guy like you who, people can hear the passion that you have for wanting to win and wanting to create something good. Not all kids are going to have that in this day and age. It's what have you done for me lately kind of an attitude. Is that hard for you on a personal – you're shaking.
No, it is. No, it is. You know, I was successful at Kansas because I lived in the gym and I got what I needed to get done academically. And that's probably the biggest challenge for me. And I talked to one of my freshmen last year, Tim Dirksen. He said, Coach, this is the first year I literally felt like I was being challenged every single day. And there were times where I questioned, can I make it? This guy's so demanding. This coaching staff is so demanding. But, I think that's what makes men, you know what I mean? And guys that just want to bring it every single day, and you're going to be held accountable every single day. There's going to be winners and losers every single day and in competitions and practice, but it's going to make you a man. You know, it's going to make you a heck of a ball player. It's going to prepare you for life when you're 43 years old like me and you can't, the stomach's a little bigger. You know, the legs are a little chunkier, but you've got a foundation for what it takes to be great.
But, Rex, I would assume you also have one advantage, and that is the fact that, A, you're looking for something other than what the North Carolinas, the Dukes are looking for, and you're looking for somebody like yourself who has heart. You can't, evaluate that sort of thing. You're looking for somebody that maybe has a passion for basketball. And so, therefore, you're looking for that thing. I mean, who was it down at Santa Clara in the NBA? It came from Canada.
Steve Nash.
Steve Nash. Perfect example there.
Yeah.
I mean, do you look for that type of guy? Can you spot that type of guy?
I don't know if you can spot him. I think that, with the rules being what they are, you only get 7 contacts and evaluations. You only have the summertime to really watch. But when you have a pro like Steve Nash, that's when they went to the NCAA tournament, and Gonzaga was so good this year because they had a pro and Kelly Olynyk. And you've got to work really hard and you got to get a little bit lucky. But you can't control the luck, but you can control the work. And I'm going to work.
After a season is over with, you sit down with your staff and you evaluate your staff. But I think I know you well enough that you sit down and you say, okay, what did Rex Walters do well? What did he not do well? What can we do? What can I do better? Yeah. What is that that evaluation process criteria for you?
You have to look inward, obviously. What did I do as a coach? How did I get my players to respond to what I was talking about? I think that's the biggest thing. You've got to look at practices and how can we organize practices better to get more out of them? What's our identity? Coach Brown, who I played for, Larry Brown, he said, you are what you emphasize. Are we emphasizing the right thing every single day? Are we holding guys accountable? I always tell our players, like, you guys go win games, just trust me, when we lose, it's going to be on me. So, what am I doing to make sure that it isn't on me and I'm putting my guys in situations to be successful? I evaluate myself as a recruiter. Guys, did I get the right guys? Were they the right type of kids? Were they the right type of competitors? There's just a list of things, and this is why at 3 o'clock in the morning, I drive my staff crazy. I'm sending emails. We got to do this better. We got to do that better. The stuff just keeps popping in your head. You've got to constantly be looking inward. What can I do better? How can I challenge myself? I got to hold myself to the higher standard or I can't ask that of my players.
We got 45 seconds left, but, you're talking about a lot of things that take up a lot of attention. And I'm just wondering keeping in balance in your life in order to make things work and livable for you.
Yeah. I mean, no question. The books you read, the Bible's a pretty good book. You need to dip into that. You need to be on church on Sunday. You got to have a great family. My family really keeps me grounded. I've got an unbelievable wife, Deanna, does a great job of keeping me on an even keel and my kids, because at the end of the day, my 4-year-old Ace can care less whether or not we beat Gonzaga. He cares about whether or not we're going to the park tomorrow. So all those things definitely keep you grounded.
Rex, I want to thank you. I was thoroughly looking forward to sitting down and having an in-depth discussion, because I don't think a lot of people out there, they can relate to the scores and everything else, but they can't relate to the commitment and people like yourself who have played the game at a high level professionally for 7 years. And now coaching, you bring an awful lot to the game, not only in the gym, but I think also outside as well. Thank you very much for joining us on Sports
Byline. I really appreciate you having me, Ron. It means a lot.
Rex Walters with us again, 7 years in the NBA. We continue with more of You in Sports Byline.